Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
So today, we're still in our Humanifesto series, and I get to introduce one of my dear friends, Kristen Birchenall, whose name used to be Kristen Bushnell, and so I always almost forget. But she is one of my great friends, and I love hearing from her because we process the world very differently, but we think a little bit more similar. So I usually agree with what she has to say. So welcome her.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay, good. Just one thing to say about the snow. I feel like we need like a big hallelujah amen that it's gone and that there's not a foot of it outside. I am an extreme introvert. I prefer to be at my house. Most of the time I'm a homebody. If you are friends with me, you'll probably notice you've been invited to my house because I like people to come there so I don't have to leave. But as soon as I feel like I can't leave, then I felt extremely trapped. And I was like checking my weather app, and then that brought more anxiety because it was just like snowflakes every day, and then they would change and it was sun and I'd get excited, and then like an hour later it's like, no, it's gonna be snow again. And I am over it. And I have to say, just real quick, if you're watching online and you live somewhere like Michigan or the East Coast, I have two things to say to you. One, there's a lot of hills here, by the way. I live on one. And two, it just doesn't snow here enough for us to be good at it. So we admit we're not good at it. So stop making fun of us and just go drive on your flat roads with all your experience and leave us alone. So I am just thrilled that we're here, because if we weren't here, it would mean that there was more. So yay for today. We are in this series called Humanifesto, where we're talking about the stories that were told about what Jesus said and did and how those can help make us more human. And we've been focusing on the book of Matthew, but Ryan, who's in charge of our speaking calendar, asked me to consider doing a parable. And so I picked one in Luke. And I don't care because I can do whatever I want up here. So I just picked that one. So I can remember this time I grew up in church, and I can remember we were getting a new youth pastor. And so it was like Sunday morning, they were saying, we're all going to the big church because he's gonna be preaching in front of everyone as this introduction, and he's gonna be talking about the prodigal son. And we were like, oh, that's so boring. Everybody talks about that. We've already heard that. We know that one. Like, we had all the knowledge there was to have when we were 13. But we went and he talked about it. And so when Ryan said parable, that's like the first one that came to my mind. It's like one of the biggest ones. And I'm going to be talking about it today, but I want to talk about it with a different lens. I want to talk about it basically as a metaphor for what I feel like is part of the spiritual journey, no matter your background. But I wanted to start by saying a few notes about background when it comes to this place. From a leadership and teaching perspective, I wanted to share with you what I understand about the background of the people who go to Eastlake. A majority of them come from a Christian tradition. Most who have a Christian background have gone through some sort of what we have called a deconstruction of faith, or else they wouldn't be here. They would be at what we call real churches. Thirdly, I feel personally certain at this point that Eastlake will always have what I would call a revolving door. Eastlake will always be a place where people come and go as they need it. We are a place that people find when they need it. When they need a safe place to explore and not feel scared about thinking something new or not thinking something old. And so people will always be coming through our doors, and people will also feel the need to move on at some point too. And so because of that, because of this revolving entry, you will hear us talk about some similar themes often from up here. There are also obviously people here who don't have that Christian tradition background, who have a variety of other religious or spiritual backgrounds. Those people don't tend to have the Christian baggage that we often refer to. But here's what I do know. I know that we are a community of people who are committed to seeking what is true. And that journey is a difficult yet beautiful one that deserves to be spurred on. And that's what we're trying to do here. So I want to talk today about what I think it can look like to seek what is true, whether you have baggage you carry with you or not. And I also have a little exercise that I'm going to have us do here, which I'm excited for. So, the prodigal son. Basically, I'm just going to summarize the story for you if you're not familiar with it. It's a parable that Jesus told, and it's just he just starts by saying there was a man with two sons. If you grew up with the Bible, there might have been like a bold title that said like prodigal son. It's not, Jesus didn't say, I don't think, I'm going to tell you this story of the prodigal son. He said, there is a man with two sons, and the younger son comes to his father and demands essentially his inheritance. And it says he journeyed, which the father gave him, and it says he journeyed to a distant land where he squandered his wealth in wild living. And then when he has nothing left, there is a famine that comes to that country, and he finds himself with nothing. He ends up getting a job taking care of pigs, and he has this low moment where he sees what the pigs are eating, and he's been in this famine, and he wishes he could eat what they were eating. And he has this moment, and it says that he came to himself, or when he came to his senses, he decided to go home and ask his father to accept him back as a servant in his household. And the story goes that while he was on his way home, while still a long ways off, the father sees him and comes running to him and throws his arms around him and calls for the servants and says, let's throw a party, put a robe on him, let's kill the fattened calf or whatever it is, because my son is home. And then meanwhile, the older brother, who has been diligently and dutifully staying home, hears the commotion of the party and then understands what's happening, and it says he's angry. And when his father comes to talk to him, he kind of says, I've been slaving for you for all of these years, and you've never thrown a party for me, yet you are doing this for this wasteful son of yours. And the story is told that the father says, my son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours, but we had to celebrate because your brother has come home. Okay, so that is the general gist of the story. Like I said, I heard the story a lot growing up in my childhood, always through the lens, though, of the father is God, and we are the younger son, and we go off and we sin, and when we decide we're not going to do that anymore, and when we change our ways and turn from it, then God accepts us back with open arms. And today I want us to look at it through a different lens. That's the great thing about parables, is that they invite you to see it differently. And I want to propose this new way of viewing it, and that's this. I think it's important at some point on our spiritual journey to squander away what has been inherited. I'm proposing that we need to be like the younger son. We need to take what we have been given and let it go. I'd like for you to think about your spiritual, I know this is hard to do, I want you to think about your spiritual knowledge and understanding in its totality, like this thing that you carry around with you. It was given to you as an inheritance when you were still young by your family. And what I mean by family, I mean parents, family, church, community, culture, neighborhoods, schools, the people around you. It started out small and it grew with time, learning with experience. Whether your spiritual knowledge was based on Jesus, God, the Bible, Buddha, peace in general, it doesn't matter. I just want you to think, how were you raised and what was given to you in terms of spiritual ideas? What were you told? Was there a God? Was this a nice God? Or was it a scary God? Were you going to be okay in the end? How much of being okay was your responsibility? Was there life after death? Does it matter? Now, it's a natural part of culture to give children ideas about spirituality. We're all searching for meaning. That's part of the human journey, and that's part of how culture functions. It's how we teach children to grow beyond themselves, to think beyond what is right in front of them. But it's also an important marker in our journey at some point to separate what is given from the giver and truly decide on our own what feels true. True about ourselves and true about our place in the world. And while this story may simply be Luke's interpretation of sin and repentance, that's what I said, like what I love about these parables is that there's rooms for another interpretation, not another final one, like that one was wrong, this one is right, but the nature of these stories is to think for yourself. So when I think about this, I think about this son, and I just imagine, like, what was he like? I imagine that he was tired of his life, frustrated probably. I feel like he definitely didn't feel loved by his father or his family. He thought there might be something else out there, something more worthwhile, something different to be a part of. In demanding his inheritance, he essentially told his father, "I wish you were dead, and since you're not, can we just pretend that you are?" His wild life in this new land may have been fun for a while, but then, of course, he's left there with nothing in a famine. And it seems to me to do these things just comes with a lot of pain. Pain of identity, pain of regulation, of disappointment, of guilt, the pain of squandering away what you were given and finding yourself with nothing. The Greek definition of squander is actually to separate. But we tend to hear this story through the more figurative definition of waste. And this, it says, you know, the son wasted away what was given to him. And yes, apparently he did lose the money, but I wonder, was the journey in itself entirely wasteful? I think this idea of prodigal, which is the title we hear, which means wasteful, should be called into question with regards to this story, or at least examined a little more deeply. It seems to me that it was the wasting away of what he thought he had that actually showed him what was true. The painful journey of letting go of your inheritance, as difficult or as unwise as it may seem, is what can lead you to actual truth. Anyone who has gone through a process of deconstructing their beliefs in any capacity knows that it most certainly is painful in some way. But just because it's painful doesn't mean that it's wasted. And your approach to life can be in such a way that nothing is wasted. You know that, right? You can approach life as if nothing is a waste. Nothing is actually squandered because once it's gone, something new takes its place, and so it did serve its purpose. And isn't it interesting, too, that the call of it being prodigal or wasteful was coined by the older brother? In one translation, he calls his brother wasteful delinquent and another a squanderer. It's a very religious point of view, is it not, to call someone else's journey misguided or wasteful, when in the end, the result of it is beautiful. The father sees this, though. Stan Mitchell and I were talking recently as I was prepping for this, and he said, the father so believed in the prodigal journey that he financed the trip. If the father wanted his sons to know the truth of his love for them and their true identity, he might have known that it couldn't have been found by just staying home. There is a walking away, an exploration, a falling apart that needed to happen. And those need to happen for us too. And sometimes they're on purpose and in our control, and other times it just happens. But you then need to decide what to do when you're sitting in that rubble. You can sit there for a little while, but then you need to do something. And the son decided to get up and go home. If you go to East Lake, you will hear these words fairly often, deconstruction and reconstruction. And what we're referring to with those is a deconstruction of faith, where the things you previously believed or held certainty in kind of come tumbling down once you have the freedom to really look at it for yourself. And then reconstruction, where we build something new out of what remains or our newly held current beliefs. Actually, I talked about this in 2017, and I looked back at my notes and surprisingly agreed with most of what I wrote 2 years ago, so I feel like I'm doing good. But I have had numerous conversations over the years with people who go here, so many, about these topics. And many people can freely talk about their deconstruction, either the, like, being past it in this, like, you know, how we felt, how it was scary, or they're thankful for it, or all of these things. But not many people talk about reconstruction. And I've been meeting with a group of East Lakers recently, and someone brought this up when we were meeting together, and she said, I think East Lake is really good at being a safe place for people to deconstruct, but I don't think East Lake has been good at helping people build again. And I think she's right. Someone asked me, they were like, well, as a staff member, do you feel like that's true? And I was like, yep. And I had to, like, I went home and I was like, why is that? Like, why is that not being, why is that not clear? Why are we doing that? Are we not? I have like a few thoughts about that, but the primary one I came to is why it feels like maybe we aren't as helpful in helping people rebuild. Is that I think as people who like talk or speak or teach from here, we're extremely hesitant to communicate like we just have a new set of beliefs for you. We want people to go on their individual journeys to and from the squander, and we don't want to interfere in your process. But I think we have a job to do, and that's to improve the way we resource people on the journey. Stan Mitchell, who's on the team here, is going to be offering a class this spring that goes more into depth about all of this. And so if any of this is resonating with you, I hope you'll look out for that class. I hope you'll try it. I'm going to take it. I'm so excited. I think the problem with the construction of spirituality is that there isn't a clear path to follow once you have let go of traditional orthodoxy. Traditional orthodoxy says, here is the road and here's the way. And once you've kind of established, like, oh, I'm not so sure about that, it's hard to know then, well, then where do I go? Deconstruction happens more easily. Things crumble down and they hit other things on the way that you didn't even know you were thinking. But as anyone knows, building a house is more difficult than tearing one down. I should know. I'm married to a general contractor. I have seen houses come down in like 1, 2, 3 days. Entire houses wiped. But building it again, building something new, can take over a year. Another reason why talking about reconstruction is harder, actually even doing it yourself, is because building something new implies some sort of certainty. You're saying, I think the stairs should go over there, and I think the kitchen should look like this. And building new implies that you have your plans and your permits and your supplies all ready to go. And it's really scary when you're standing there wanting to rebuild and you're feeling unsure. Deconstruction requires you to let go of certainty, but rebuilding asks you to put something in place. And in my experience, it was really hard to put spiritual things in place once I have learned to let go of them. It was scary for me because I didn't want to end up where I was before, just defending a new set of beliefs and thinking everyone else wasn't getting it. But the responsible journeyer will see the need to take spiritual ideas given to us, separate them all out, but also not rest in what I don't believe anymore, and see what we actually think about them now. Getting up and leaving the mess and taking a step. So today I want to run us through a little bit of an exercise together. I want us to get tangible here because I think that's another problem with reconstruction. You aren't forced to do it. Deconstruction happens to you, but to move forward, my opinion is that you need to have some tangible thoughts. I'm not saying you need to have certainty again, just in different things. But, and you know, I think above all else, my deconstruction process confirmed with me how much of spirituality will always, has been, and always will remain a mystery. But I found that for my own building again, I needed to think and come to some temporary conclusions. And most people don't like doing that with spiritual things. You aren't forced to form a complete sentence, and your thoughts can just drift into, well, I just don't know. And actually, Gary Hill asked me the other day if I liked speaking here. And I was like, no, absolutely not. But what I was able to articulate is that I don't like doing it, but on Monday, or maybe not tomorrow, maybe by Wednesday, I will feel thankful for the process I had to go to put words to what I was thinking. And not everyone is required to do that. And I think you may actually land, with a lot of things, you will land with, I just don't know. But it's important to do the work to get there, rather than to say I don't know out of fear or frustration for the journey. So, here's the exercise I want you to do. Over on this side of the room, there's buckets with pens and paper. If you could pass those across the room and everybody take a sheet of paper and pens. And if you are online, you can just pause this and go. I don't know, do people have paper and pens at their house anymore? Probably not. You can bring up a new document on your screen and you can type. If you're listening to the podcast, you can go where you find the messages on Eastlake's website, and this will be there to download. The questions are actually on there. Someone first service was trying to like write them down as fast as I was saying them. But we are going to take some time to answer some questions, and I'm going to read them through till everybody gets one, and then we're going to have some time for you to answer them. So what I want you to do is pick something about spirituality that is interesting or confusing to you that you find right now. You can pick a spiritual topic. I mean, honestly, anything. What do you think about? Jesus, death, heaven, hell, the cross, grace, God, goodness, church, the Bible, energy, spiritual experiences. Just pick something. And then I want you to answer, what did you grow up thinking about that? What was the inherited view? Thirdly, at the very basic level, what can you say feels true now? Four, what questions does this lead to? Five, what is the next step you can take to move forward? Six, who is someone you want to talk to about this? And seven, how does this make you feel? Okay, before you get started, let me just say, if there's nothing interesting or confusing to you, you can write your grocery list or your plans for the week. I'll give you, like we say, you can participate as much or as little as you feel comfortable. If there is nothing interesting or confusing to you, I would suggest you keep coming here because there probably will be just something set up here that you're like, wait, what was that? So we're gonna have a few minutes to do this on your own and then we'll come back together. So let's go.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Eastlake podcast. This is Ryan with a quick interruption. We'll jump back into the message in just a second. Once again, just wanted to say thank you to so many of you who are continuing to contribute. Many of you who don't even live anywhere physically near us. There's no geography that unites us. What unites us is this growing awareness that life is a gift and love is the point. And this crazy dream of cultivating a community that doesn't center around theological or supernatural agreement, but instead says, ultimately, a community of people who journey towards becoming love, that could actually make a difference in the world. So thanks for being a part of that. Thanks for contributing. If you haven't yet, but you find these messages helpful to your life, consider making a donation. Just hop onto our website, eastlakecc.com, and you can make a one-time or an ongoing donation there. So thanks for considering that. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Let's jump back in with the message.
Now, I recognize that I am a problem solver, type A, like things to be neat kind of person. This exercise certainly doesn't solve our problems, probably brings up some new ones. But what I've heard from many, many people who go here is that they find themselves sitting in the rubble of deconstruction, just a mess, and they don't know how to move forward. And I wanted to offer a step. So I challenge you to look at question 3 about what, at a very basic level, can you say seems true now when you are considering spiritual things, and not even spiritual things, honestly. I mean, everything we say here a lot, everything is spiritual, but when you're evaluating your marriage and your parenting perspectives and all of those things, what is basic truth that I know in my heart right now? For me in my journey, moving beyond what I don't believe into what I do currently has been really helpful, even if it's just that bottom line basic. So for me, I may not believe in a God that hovers in the sky, watching our every move, may choose to intervene or not, and decides where we spend eternity. If you know me, if you've been here, if you've heard me share my story, lots of different parts of my story, but there, I think this happens to people along the way. Life happens to you, and all of a sudden, what you thought before doesn't work. That view of God stopped working for me when it wasn't true in my life. And I think I spent a couple of years being like, well, you know, his ways are beyond our ways. That's like the ultimate excuse of when you don't know what's happening. And I just felt like, if it's true, it has to be true all of the time. And I don't know, I could be off there, but that's what it felt like to me. So I couldn't believe in that kind of God anymore. But I think I also then didn't go to, well, everything is meaningless, so do what you want and live how you want. There's a temptation to think if it's not this, then it's nothing. And we have to do work to find the in-between. I may not think that God is in the sky, but I do believe there is a source of everything good and perfect and righteous and compassionate that runs through our existence. The ground of all being, what is true for everyone, and that is God to me. And as much as I connect to it through my thoughts and my actions and my spirit, I connect to God. I connect to the source of what is good in this world. And all of those godly things are in me, and they are in you, the spirit of God, if you will. And I think it might be true that there is some sort of consciousness connected to that God. That, I think, is one of those things that will always be a mystery. But it took me a while to come to these temporary conclusions. I had to think on it and put words to it. But putting words to it grounded me a little bit. It grounded me, but it also gave me hope and something to move forward with. In this parable that Jesus told, the son decided to go home, not knowing what would happen, but he knew just enough to move forward. He knew just enough to get moving, and it was the process then of taking steps forward that he then learned what was really true. I think of some of those other topics that I rattled off at the beginning. I think of Jesus and these questions that I've gone through. I spent a lot of time thinking about this. And at one point, my answer to question 3 was at the very basic level, I knew Jesus was still important to me. And that was it at one point. I didn't know why. I didn't have reason for it. But I knew I wasn't letting that part of my spirituality go. And so it gave me questions to ask that then helped me move forward. And I would say this, not necessarily new answers, but even the questions that I was asking felt like steps forward in a direction. We're not always going to get answers, but that doesn't mean we're standing still. When it comes to the Bible, I've worked through a lot of this, and that's one of my favorite things to talk about this kind of experience with. I think about energy. That was one of the things I said. These I made these questions up, by the way. This is just my, like, regurgitating what I think is my process that I've gone through. But I think about spiritual things that I've experienced in the past and that they might have to do with energy, and I want to learn more about it. I think some worship experiences, prayer, the Holy Spirit, things might be Christian names we give to this scientific thing that is going on and happening around us. I don't say that out loud in my everyday life. I'm not forced to. I say it here because I'm forced to. It feels a little bit scary. Also, if your background is not Christian, I hope that these questions were helpful for you. I don't know. That is my background, and I'm operating out of my experience. But I just hope, like, what if something you didn't think was true is starting to feel that way? So I also ask questions 6 and 7 very purposefully. I think you need to talk these things through with people. Part of what has enabled me to rebuild something is that I have this beautiful community here of people surrounding me who don't think I'm crazy, who aren't scared of my questions, who don't cringe with new ideas that I say. Like, I don't know, I cringed when I just said that, but you guys didn't. And that gives me hope. It makes me feel like it's okay. It makes me feel like I'm not alone and I'm not crazy. And so I want you to find people who encourage that in you. If you don't have that, I think you should look at groups that we're starting. Like, find some people to start talking these things through with. If you don't, you feel isolated and like you're wrong. That's my experience anyway. And then question 7, how does this feel? Spirituality is obviously not only in our heads. I live in this realm a lot, if you can't tell by what I just made you do. Amy Robertson, a girl who goes here, she's been very articulate about this concept, and I appreciate her pushing back on that. How you feel and how you embody your beliefs and the changes you're going through is important to monitor and to acknowledge. It can be scary, disorienting, freeing, exciting, sad. It can be scary to have conversations with your spouse about what you might not believe anymore and what you're thinking might be true now, especially if when you got married, you thought you agreed on those things. It can be scary. Other relationships, if you're changing the way you think about things and you have relationships that were built on those same thoughts, now hopefully you discover that your relationships are built on more than thoughts. But the process is scary. It's a heavy thing to have to construct something in the midst of feeling like you're affecting way more than just you. These feelings affect our building process because, like I said, spirituality is, it's emotional, it's psychological, it's not just cerebral. It's a process. Like I said at the very beginning, it's difficult yet beautiful to be seeking the truth. And in the end, that is what I believe. We are all searching for what is actually true. And if we're searching humbly and honestly with an open receiving posture, I think we'll end up where we want to be. All the things that you're thinking about, the spiritual things that cause you to question or doubt or wonder or be in awe, whatever names you give them, what you're trying to find is truth. And the good news is that, and I think this is good news, that what is true will always be true. At least that's what I'm hoping for. Our quest to find it might take twists and turns, but what we're searching for is always there. I don't think it moves or changes. We move and we change as we experience it. We're just trying to get like a glimpse of something that is so grand, and we're trying to put words to something that is indescribable, just hoping that someday we'll grasp a little bit more of the truth than maybe we had before. For me, this analogy has worked when I look at my experience and like the staff here, because we kind of went through this process together. I think of it as like a circling, like an orbit, where we're circling around this idea of truth. And every time, like in winter, I see it this way, and in spring, I see it that way. And with different experiences, we catch a new angle of it. And this is part of the journey. And some people have to circle way out to experience new things and explore and then come back. And other people can just be like, oh, I'm just gonna be Mars, just one line out, and I'm just gonna go like this. But To me, that analogy has helped that it's my perspective that is changing, not what I'm looking for. I get a better glimpse of reality when I can take in reality. You know, another older definition of squander is to winnow. I don't want you to feel some sort of pressure to have to squander everything away, to need to have this crazy, loud, noticeable implosion or explosion of all that you are. It might just need to be winnowed down. Separate what is useful from what isn't. And if we're really searching for what is true, I have a feeling you won't be left with nothing. The father's love for his sons was always there. Their identities as sons and beloved was always true. They just didn't see that truth from where they were, from the lens they were given, from the perspective they had. It had to be winnowed down through experience, denial, justification, learning, growing. And then the younger son saw it, experienced it. The interesting thing is that we don't actually hear what happened with the older son, whether he was able to experience that by staying home. Maybe he did, but we don't know. Okay, so there's one last thing I want to say before we go, and that is this. My description of deconstruction and reconstruction doesn't really sound joyful and beautiful. I admit that. And I think the journey is supposed to have that too. I'm quick to be in my head and to problem solve. I'm quick to remember the scary and the fearful because that's the way our brains work. They are wired for stress response and self-protection. But there's two people in this community recently who have both said similar things. Dave Barnett and Dave Lunsford have both reminded me lately that we must take time to honor the beauty and the joy of the journey. To not stress so much about thoughts and beliefs, but remember to be alive despite those things. Thoughts and beliefs will come and go. I will believe and deconstruct, and I will believe again and deconstruct again. Ryan was talking to me after when we were talking about through this, and he said, it's kind of like eating. Like, you could have the best meal you've ever had, and in about 4 hours, you're going to be hungry again. It's part of the journey to not be satiated all the time. So I think that is the spiritual journey. That's what makes us more human. We're saying this is the reality. We won't ever know for sure, but we can keep trying to get glimpses of it along the way. So I was reminded to notice that no matter what we think about God or truth, the world turns on. The sun rises, the sun sets. I can notice it or not. I can feel joy and gratitude that my beliefs are allowed to come and go, that my thoughts alone don't nail me down or define my entire existence. There are lovely things to be discovered on the spiritual journey, and we should be excited for the opportunity to go out and discover, but also thankful to have something to come home to. They are both lovely, the exploration and the home. So I'm going to work on noticing the lovely. Would you stand with me? May we be prodigals who journey and know that nothing is truly wasted, and may we have strength and courage to both squander and build. So let's go out knowing, reminding ourselves that because of that, we choose to live and to embrace the fact that life is a gift and love is the point. Thanks so much for being here. Have a great week.